Hello and welcome to the Keeper Cup podcast. Chad Young and Pete Ball with you here today. And it's been a couple of weeks, maybe a few weeks. It's been a long time, Pete. It's been a while.
Although our last episode, I think, was my solo episode. So I think it's been a very long time.
Yeah.
You did the talked about in that one.
we've both been traveling. As much as it seems like it's been a long time, actually, in the midst of all this travel, you were in Seattle and we got dinner.
That's right.
It was the first ever in-person Keeper Cut, except we didn't record it. We just ate dinner and hung out, which was quite nice. But yeah, so it's been a while, and we were in the midst of evaluating our listener league drafts, and we were talking about this just before we started recording that, you know, oh, we should keep, you know, maybe we should keep going with that. And then it's like, yeah, but it's been a couple of weeks and things move so quickly this time of year that it's really hard to know how to analyze something when context changes constantly. And it's been like, there have been some real changes. And so instead, I think what we're going to do is take a look at those two leagues and we'll look at our rosters and talk a little bit about how things might have changed for our rosters and what we think we might need. Because tonight, this episode's recording on Sunday, March 8th. It'll come out tomorrow on the 9th. But tonight is the first fab run for both of those leagues, which means you and I are both sort of in the midst of figuring out what we want to do. And I know on my teams, I've got some moves to make. And so we're going to talk a little bit about how quickly things change. And that's sort of the general theme for this episode, but I want to actually start with something that happened this morning. So just this morning, I was in an auto new auction. This is for my food and travel league that I talk about quite often because I just love that league. And one of the managers in that league bought Zach Wheeler. And I'm going to see if I can pull up right now the results from that auction. Because he paid a hefty price for Wheeler. And Wheeler has, you know, his value has fluctuated quite a bit. So Wheeler went for $31. He actually did not get bought back by that manager. This is my mistake. He got bought by someone else. But that manager was in on the bidding. But it was a $31 Wheeler who had been cut at $27 on January 31st. So 6 weeks ago, 5.5 weeks ago, right at the deadline, he was cut at $27. And I got to be honest, I thought $27 was kind of a no-brainer cut price. I don't know. If I look at my other leagues right now, this was the last of my auto new leagues to auction. And Wheeler's price is 22, 23, 18, and 27. Except for this one where he is 31. And that 27 was last week, like just a few days ago. And so I think it's fascinating. Wheeler is just an interesting guy to me because when he was cut at $27, that felt like an obvious cut. And paying 31 for him right now doesn't feel that bad to me because it feels like I feel like the entire news and talk track around Wheeler has really shifted in the last month or so.
It has, but I'm not entirely sure why. I mean, like, he's saying the right things and like we still haven't seen him against major league batters and he's older and this was a serious injury. So like, I think he's a cut at 26, 27, whatever it was. And I'm not buying him at 31. The closer we get to the start of the season and the longer he goes without facing major league bats, like that worries me. And like, if he's 80% of what he was before, maybe that makes him, I don't know, like Sandy Alcantara, and there's a lot of value there. But I just feel like we're in a point for whatever reason in baseball where there's so much pitching upside. I mean, it's crazy. Like that from pick 100 to 200 in redrafts is like, there's so many awesome names from Chase Burns and Trey Savage and Cam Schlittler and Bubba Chandler. Like it's Nolan McLean, like, there's a lot of good names there and Wheeler's kind of going amongst that. And so like, I don't know, $31, I feel like I could maybe maybe almost get two of those guys, or in a draft, just take one of those guys over or right before or right after, I should say, Zach Wheeler. So you're right. Like the thesis here is things really change, right? And they do. Clearly they have for Wheeler based on that price. But for that specific player, I'm still out. I'm still out.
It's interesting. I am. I'm in on Wheeler. I mean, I have Wheeler in one of our listener leagues, the head-to-head league. I picked him up. And I picked him up in
the rotor.
There we go. We both have him. I picked him up in part in the head-to-head because if he was out for a while, I just need him back for the playoffs, assuming I can make the playoffs, right? And the reality is for me, I felt like the odds that taking Wheeler over one of those other guys, whoever it would have been at that point in the draft, and I'll have to go back and look and see where I drafted him exactly. But like taking Wheeler where I took him wasn't going to stop me from making the playoffs. That is sort of where I landed. Was I wasn't going to be in a, I didn't think I would find myself in a position where, oh, I would have made the playoffs if only I hadn't taken Wheeler there. And instead, I found myself in a position, I am hoping to find myself in a position where I make the playoffs and Wheeler is available to me by then. At least that was my thinking almost a month ago when we drafted. And where I say things have changed, I think part of what's made such a big difference is that while we haven't seen him against major league hitters, yes, it is just him saying the right things. There are a couple of things that have happened that it's really just one thing, I guess, but a couple of things that have happened that do matter. One of those is he's throwing off a mound. He's throwing some bullpens. Like we have not seen him in a game. No, we have not seen him face major league hitters, but he's throwing. That's important. The other thing that hasn't happened, I guess, rather than the thing that has happened is he has not been put on the 60 day. Now that doesn't mean he's not going to open the season on the IL, but the Phillies have been suggesting that he'll be available, you know, the first time they need him. So whenever it is, they first need a fifth starter, basically, they think he'll be available. That should be within the first couple of weeks of the season. That might be enough for him to go on a 15-day IL, and then he comes off in mid-April. But when I drafted him and was thinking, hey, I'll have him for the playoffs at least, like a June return seemed very much in the cards, or at least, you know, a possibility. That seems super late now. It seems pretty likely we're going to see him in April. And that makes a big difference, I think, in terms of his value, not just because you get the extra couple months of time with him than you might have expected a month ago, but because it suggests that he's healthy and progressing and close, right? Guys who are 2 months away, like the difference between Wheeler and Garrett Cole, right? Two aces, two older guys coming off serious surgeries, questions about what they're doing. We haven't seen either of them on a mound yet, like similar situations, but we already know Cole's not going to be back. And, you know, he's looking at like a June timeline, and Wheeler's looking at mid-April. Being a month away from a guy's return significantly reduces the opportunity for things to go wrong. Doesn't mean it can't, right? He could have a setback. Things could go wrong. Like, a guy could be due back tomorrow and things could go wrong. But knowing we're within a month of a return, roughly, for Wheeler makes a big difference. If he slips by a little bit, fine. I think when guys are, I feel like in the last couple of years, I've gotten burned too often by guys who are like, oh, this guy should be back in mid-season. And then mid-season becomes July, and July becomes, oh, well, we're going to wait till after the All-Star break. And then it becomes late July. And then all of a sudden it's August. And then the pitcher is working their way back into shape. And they're not really, we don't really know what we have in them until September, right? Because their first three or four starts are still sort of like, we don't know where they are. We're going to see, like, with Wheeler, I feel pretty confident that even if his date slips and he's more like late April, by the time I hit June 1st, I'll know what I have. And that may be a guy I have to cut. Like what I have may be a guy I have to cut. I get that. But I'll know what I have by June 1st. Whereas like Cole, hopefully he's back on a mound by June 1st. And then it might be, that might not happen. And then it might be July before I know what I have. And that's a big difference to me.
Yeah, that is for sure a big difference. And it's worth noting, these two aren't the only two. I mean, there's, I know Jared Jones is one of these guys who's going late, who you can stash on an IL spot. And that's obviously a huge part of this is, does your league have IL spots? Because I really don't want to touch any of them unless they do. And help me out here, Chad. I feel like there's one or two other obvious guys here who are coming back from injury. Carlos Rodon is another.
Talk about Justin Steele.
Yep, Justin Steele is another. So, like you said, you're going to be able to find out quicker with Zach Wheeler and be able to make a roster decision based on that. At the same time, he is going more expensive than those guys. So I think this is also an approach thing of, like, if you want to take a shot, and we talk about this every year, especially in keeper leagues, because you can get such good potential value on these players when you draft them super late because they're hurt and then they come back and then they're good again. If your approach is you just want to get one of them and hope that they turn into a keeper, I might want the latest of the group, or in this case, maybe the second latest of the group, because I don't know how interested I am in Jared Jones. But if I have IL spots and I could secure one of them, then I'm in. But I look at the price and Wheeler. I'm in a draft right now on ESPN, and for head-to-head categories leagues, they have him ranked as a top 100 player. And I just, to me, that's like crazy. I'm having a hard time with that, but I also understand, you know, it's Zach Wheeler. The upside's crazy. He's arguably the SP1 over the last five seasons.
Yeah. And I, for what it's worth, I took him with, it was a pick I had traded for. So it was the seventh round, the ninth pick of the seventh round, which is, I mean, it's hard to say in a keeper league. Is that inside the top 100? I guess it's within the first 100 picks, including keepers, right? Because the end of the seventh round would be the 84th pick in a 12-team league. So this was the 81st pick. But with all the keepers, you know, wasn't actually the 81st pick. He was probably like the 60th pick, but the 60th pick is probably the 120th best player or something like that, right? Like, I don't know. But so I'm borderline there. I do also, like, I took Cole in that league as well. And again, that was a, first of all, I took him much later. I took him in the 13th round after taking Wheeler in the 7th. So I did get him a lot cheaper. And it does go to the same sort of, like, I just want them back for the playoffs in a head-to-head league. I've got to get there, of course. One of the things that has changed for me, you know, I talked about how quickly things can change. When I drafted those guys, I assumed they would both be on the IL before our first Fab run. And they're not, right? Fab is going to run tonight. Neither of those guys is on the IL. In fact, the only one of my pitchers who is actually on the IL is Reese Olson, who was healthy when I drafted him. So, yeah, that's not ideal. And he got put on the IL on February 6th or something like that. February 10th. It was reported on the 6th. I drafted him. We drafted like late January with that team, that league. And so it happened real, real quick where he went from a guy that I was pretty happy to pick up to a guy that had zero value. And I think he really does have zero value. I'll stash him on the IL because why not? But
the second you need that spot, he's gone.
Yeah. But that's the thing is, like, he isn't, I like Reese Olson. He is not good enough or established enough for me to want to stash him for an entire year coming off a serious shoulder injury where I just don't know what I'm going to get from him next year. So my hope is that I can keep him stashed long enough that I find out something, what his timeline is. I get some information that tells me whether or not he is worth holding on to. Although off the top of my head, I don't even know what round I picked him in. I wonder what his, because I suspect, just as I drafted him on January 21st. It doesn't tell me the round. That's very annoying. Let me pull up the draft results and see if I can find him. I took Reese Olson. I took him in the 14th round. So is he potentially a keeper in the 13th next year? I don't think so. And so, yeah. So I again, I'll keep him stashed. Who knows? But the second I need that spot, he'll be gone. But this is an interesting situation because this team, like, I thought I would need to add a couple of pitchers just to replace the injured guys. And then I added a third injured guy, but the other two injured guys I can't actually replace yet because I can't put them on the IL yet. So I just got to sit on them. But I did get another roster spot back because I get to cut Jurickson and Profar, who I also took in this draft and now can't use. Profar is appealing the suspension.
His argument is crazy.
What's his argument? I haven't even seen it.
That it's the same. It's still in his body from 11 months ago. That like he tested positive for the same exact thing, and that's because it's still in his bloodstream.
Has cleared his system.
Yeah. Now, as I've said maybe 600 times on this show's history, I am not a doctor, but I have a hard time believing this.
Yeah.
He has no business taking performance-enhancing drugs anymore. Like, he got caught. He still got paid. He's going to make $15 million a year. Like, he's an absolute idiot if he did it. And I think he did. But you know what? Maybe there's some merit to it. Maybe, you know, he's going to get this thing reversed and we're off and running. I did think he was playing in the World Baseball Classic, but apparently there is a different Jay Profar playing in the World Baseball Classic. So he is not playing in that, at least as far as I know.
So that's an interesting one. I mean, are you, if you've got him on a roster, and I have him on both of our listener leagues. I had some fun with that in our listener league Discord when I realized that I have him in both of those leagues. I mean, are you cutting him immediately? I mean, is there any reason for me to wait for the appeal?
Well, honestly, if I knew he was appealing it, which I didn't, I just got reaction, just cut him in Otnew League 13. Then I probably would have held on to him just to see. And I'm going to feel like a fool if it gets reversed because I had him for $5 and that's a pretty good value in that league, I think. But yes, of course there's merit in waiting unless there's somebody who you think is just as good, if not potentially better on free agency, because I would make that move now, especially with these two leagues, the Fab run coming. I in those leagues, no, I think I'm cutting because I don't think he's, I guess the Roto is OBP and he's pretty good in that format, but in the head to head, I'd have no hesitation of finding a replacement for him.
Yeah. And I think the, you know, obviously if there is a better replacement, that's easy, right? Like if I was like, oh, this guy might be better anyways, fine. I think the challenge that I'm already running into as I look at that is like the top free agents in, well, let's see, in the head to head league, the top free agent outfielders by, let's do it by roster percentage, since I don't know what Fantrax score really means, are Nick Castellanos, Mickey Moniak, Jonathan India, Tommy Edman, Willie Castro, Victor Scott, Cedric Mullins, Matt Wallner, Jeff McNeil, Trevor Larnach, Isaac Collins, Tyler O'Neill, Gavin Sheets, Lourdes Gurriel Jr., Jesus Sanchez, Brandon Marsh, Parker Meadows, CJ Kafis. Are you entertained yet? Is there anyone on this list that you're like Canzone is up there, Yastrzemski, Jorge Soler?
The names are just getting worse.
I mean, I'm going further down the list, right? That's what happens. I know there are some people out there who like Denzel Clark. Yeah, my hope was that what would happen here is I would find somebody whose situation had changed in some way, right? Mm-hmm. And so we were just talking about how things change so quickly this time of year, and like somebody who, you know, suddenly was in line to start who wasn't previously, somebody who looks like they're going to get called up who we didn't think would in the past, like something like that. And I just am not, I'm not seeing it. I think, I don't know. I'm looking at, like Jake McCarthy, but that trade happened before we drafted. So it's not like he's new to Coors.
Right. And if anything, they've got some outfielders who are looking better, right? Like, I mean, Zach Veen is all of a sudden becoming interesting, and Jake McCarthy has always been a sketchy everyday player at best.
Totally.
So no, I don't think so.
Yeah. And the other challenge with McCarthy for me is I already have Brenton Doyle on this team, and I was talking about this in the Auto News Slack the other day. The Rockies outfielders, and maybe, you know, let's take a quick break. We come back. I want to talk about the Rockies outfielders and a challenge I see with them. All right. Welcome back to the Keeper Cup podcast. As promised, we're going to talk about Rockies outfielders, because who doesn't want more opportunities to talk about the Rockies? but I am going to jump into last week was bold predictions week at Rotographs, and so I have my bold predictions got posted, and I'm going to jump into those for a second to read something to you and then talk about a challenge I am having. One of my bold predictions is that the Colorado Rockies have three outfielders who return $10 of value in all auto new formats. At least three outfielders who are worth $10 by the end of the season.
Okay.
That was based on the fact that Brenton Doyle, Mickey Moniak, and Jordan Beck have all been going for under $6, and in Beck's case, under $5. McCarthy and Veen are going for more like $1.50 or $2.50 between the two of them. And basically, the argument I made is if you go and look at players from last year, I pulled up Giancarlo Stanton, Roman Anthony, Jurickson Profar, and Dalton Varsho, who played between 71 and 80 games each. And all returned very close to, if not above, double digits in salary in that amount of time. I don't see any reason to think that there can't be three of those five Rockies who do the same thing. And by do the same thing, I mean produce $10 of value if you only use them in the 71 to 80 games that they start at Coors Field. The challenge I have is the obvious thing to do, if I really believe this, which I do, is to get all these guys, pick them up everywhere. I could get them for half their value. The problem is, I am not sure I can find myself in a situation where I have three Rockies outfielders on the team, because it forces you to build an outfield that can fit all three of them half the time and replace all three of them the other half the time.
Yeah, no, that's crazy.
I don't think it works. So when I think
you
got to
pick your favorite one and try it with that one.
Yeah. I think in general, Doyle is probably my favorite, although it depends a bit on the format. In formats where Doyle and Beck run the most, other than McCarthy, but McCarthy is probably the least likely to have a job and the least likely to keep a job. And is the worst hitter of the four.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe Veen is the worst hitter of the four. Veen could be the worst hitter of the four, but he also could be the best hitter of the four. McCarthy, he's just not. That's just not who he is. And so I could see a case in 5x5 where you're like, you know, McCarthy, not only is he going to run a lot, but he'll like his legs, if he has a job, like they're still valuable on the road. Like he might hit poorly, but he'll run. But I think in 5x5, it's either Beck or Doyle. And I actually think is it the Podcasters League that I have both of them, actually. Pull up my roster there real quick and double check that, because I think that's accurate. Doyle, Beck. Yeah, I have them both. I have them for $8 total. I think that in 5x5, those guys are the obvious answers. I think in 4x4 and Fangraphs points, I'm torn between Doyle, who I think is the better play than Beck, or Moniak, who was really good last year. It's a tough decision. In Auto New, where I have both Doyle and Beck in this 5x5 league, at least it is it's deep enough that, like, if I look at my lineup when the Rockies are at home, My outfield would be Judge, Schwarber, Rooker, Doyle, and Beck. The outfielders I've got stuck on the bench are Josh Lowe, Elliot Ramos, Jung-Hoo Lee, Jesus Sanchez, and Jordan Walker, with Emmanuel Rodriguez hopefully joining that group at some point. That does feel like a situation where when those two guys are at home, they're obvious easy starts over those other guys. I'm not worried about benching someone from that group. But when they're on the road, I should be okay to start Ramos or Lowe or Lee or Sanchez or Walker. Like I should be able to come up with two other outfielders from that group, I hope. In our Fantrax league, the benches are a little shallower. I swung my arm and hit the mic.
It did the same thing to me. I don't know what just happened. I got to fix mine too.
Yeah, you got to fix yours too. I hit my mic so hard it messed yours up.
I guess so. What the heck?
That was really weird.
It's not even like, I hate when this happens.
Yeah.
Let me try this.
I think I got to leave. Oh, there we go.
There you go. All right. Let me pick up where I left off.
Yep.
So in our Fantrax league, where the bench is shallower, it's a little bit harder to work around two of those guys. And so Moniak and McCarthy are both free agents in that league that I could pick up. But with Doyle already in place, I'm not sure I want to be in a situation where I have to start those two at home and have to have two guys to replace them when they're on the road. And I don't want to start those guys on the road. One of them is fine. Like one of them I can bench, or if I have to start them occasionally, so be it. But man, I am looking at the outfielders available here and like, it's just ugly. Like Moniak stands out to me actually as a guy I'm interested in, but I don't think I can pick him up. And so I don't know what I'm going to do.
I mean, you know how I am. I prefer skills to gimmicks. Yeah. And although Coors is an undefeated gimmick, like it works. If you look at Doyle and you look at Moniak and you look at Beck, their splits, it's like almost all three of them hit over 300 at Coors and they all hit under 200 away from Coors. Like it's like clockwork. Like I get it. The same time, if it's going to put me in any kind of roster constraint, I want it to be at least be players that I believe in the skills. And I just don't really with any of them. But if I had to pick, I think I'm in the same boat as you, where like Doyle has done this for a whole season of being like Beck had a great year last year and so did Moniak. And I don't want to cut that short, but Doyle had like a top 100 fantasy season. You know what I mean? Yeah. 2 years ago. So like, I think that's my guy. And I hate to speculate on stuff like this. I don't think this is speculating, but I could swear Doyle was also dealing with off the field stuff.
He was.
So like, I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt then and assume that maybe those numbers on the road aren't quite as bad as they were last season. And he continues to mash at Coors and that's the guy that I'll circle the wagons on. But the other two, it's just taking up too much of my roster, unless it's all new where, you know, you have 40 freaking roster spots, like your situation where those backup options, those are all, that strategy is going to work great. There's enough there. I mean, Jesus Sanchez was like the fourth guy you rattled off. I think he could have a pretty good season.
I agree.
So I think it works there, but in the roto or in the head-to-head listener leagues, I just don't think there's the space to do it. Like I'd rather commit that space to like the guys we were talking about earlier, like give me some injury bounce back pitchers that I can just stash on my bench or whatever it is.
Yeah, the problem is I need outfielders I can use because I have to replace
Turks and Profar. That ultimately still is the conundrum here.
It is. And this is the thing at this time of year is like things are changing, but not really. Like, I think the hard thing for me is I look at what's happening with, like, I look at what's happening with Profar and like he is hurt. Or not her. He is suspended or, you know, expected to be suspended. And like, I have to do something about that. I can't sit on him. But then it's like, okay, well, whose value has really raised in spring training? And among guys who, you know, might be available, like Mike Yastrzemski is having a great spring. Do those 20 plate appearances really make me think he's that much more valuable? No. I don't know. I mean, there are guys who's like, you know, what might move up a draft board a little bit, but like, man, when I'm looking at guys I wasn't willing to draft a month ago or 6 weeks ago or whatever it was that we drafted, it is really hard to find someone who 6 weeks ago I was like, eh. And now I'm like, okay, that guy could replace Profar for me. And so that's why I look at the list and, you know, now I've switched over to the head-to-head or the roto leagues. That was head-to-head. And like Victor Scott also available here and maybe more appealing because in roto, at least he could rack up some steals for me while I, you know, figure things out. But then like he's having a terrible spring after he supposedly retooled his swing and is.
You don't want to hear that. Yep.
He's trying to bunt for hits more, which I guess is like, all right, I guess that's something.
Sure.
Again, you're
don't worry about being a better hitter. Just find a gimmick.
Yeah. Well, fine. You know what? If it works, it works, I guess. But well, Sanchez is available there as well. Maybe Sanchez is the answer for me.
Yeah, I could be in both. I mean, maybe that's what we can take from this. But the Roto League is going to be even harder because that's a weekly format, right? So like you can't even like consider the Rockies approach unless, you know, all right, they're away at Cincinnati and they're home against bad pitchers. Like, all right, in that case, I'll start three Rockies outfielders. But like that's a format where that's just not going to work. So I think it's hard to do this now because we did just draft, even though we started this show by saying like we drafted too long ago to really talk about it effectively. But we also did draft so recently that like guys like Mike Yastrzemski having a nice spring, that's cute, but that doesn't really move the needle at all. So basically what we're looking at are all the players that people decided, I don't want any of these guys. And once the season starts, that's when it'll be easier to replace those guys. So I think right now the answer for replacing Profar is if he was taking up a prominent spot, like an outfield three spot, an outfield four spot, is exploring that trade market.
Yeah, I guess I could look at trades. Part of me is as I'm looking at the Roto League, which as you pointed out is a weekly format, my outfield in that league is weird. My whole roster in that league is weird. I have what I think is a pretty strong infield in general. I got Shea Langelier as a catcher. I got Vinny Pascantino at first. Jose Ramirez at third, Neto at short, Murakami at corner, but I also have Max Muncy as my util, and so I can move him into a corner spot if something better comes along. I've got Jackson Holliday at second base, but I also have Willie Castro, who, speaking of Rockies, when he's at home, I think Castro is going to be a great play. I think he'll be a really, really good fit at Coors. And I have Travis Pezzana on that roster, who may in fact force his way into the Guardians plans sooner rather than later. We'll have to see.
Exciting.
So I really like what I've got in the infield there. My outfield is Soderstrom, Elliot Ramos, Evan Carter, Jurickson Profar, and Taylor Wood. And it's, you know, I've got Cam Smith and Brandon Marsh on the bench. The thing I have working in my favor here is that because it's a weekly league, I don't need depth the same way. Right. I could.
Right.
So one of the things I could do is replace Profar with just someone I think might be interesting who I don't trust because I don't have to trust them yet. I'm in a similar boat with my pitchers because I've got a mess on my hand there too, because again, I have both Justin Steele and Gerrit Cole. Neither of them are on the IL. And so I can't replace them yet. And so I have to decide if I don't know what I'm going to do about pitching this first week unless they get placed on the IL soon enough that I'm able to bring someone else in. Because as it stands right now, I've got Schlittler, Hunter Brown, Logan Webb, and then I have Drew Rasmussen. So like that one through four of, I guess the right order to put that would be Webb, Brown, Rasmussen, Schlittler. I'm good with. My fifth starter could be Gerrit Cole or could be Justin Steele, but it won't be yet. It's Robbie Snelling for now. And I like Robbie Snelling. The problem is I basically have three stashes between Snelling, Cole, and Steele.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I don't know if Snelling's going to start the year in the Miami rotation.
No. Right. Now, I have a roster spot open because I also have Spencer Schwellenbach, who's already on the IL, which is just my pitching getting decimated in these leagues is not the most fun. But I have an open roster spot, and I really like, I can start Brown, Rasmussen, Schlittler, and Webb first week. I just need one more guy to slot in there, and I can play matchups for that first week. So maybe I can figure that out. But I'm basically going to be streaming that last spot until somebody steps up. My big concern in this league, though, is my outfield is a mess. And while Profar is not a star by any means, in a 5x5 OBP league, he was pretty valuable.
Yeah.
Like having Soderstrom as my number one, and then Ramos, Profar, and Evan Carter as my next three, and then Taylor Ward really even as well. Like those four guys, none of them are a true number two, but they're all pretty good for a three or four, right? And so like I felt like I was in a good spot, but it's precarious. And so now I'm counting on like, you know, I could slot Brandon Marsh in. He is fine. I'm hoping that Cam Smith is better than he was last year and more the guy.
Hard to be worse.
For sure. But yeah, that roster got real ugly real fast. And that, unlike the Roto League, it's not just, you know, stay alive, keep yourself in the top six, make the playoffs and see what happens. Like, this team actually has to be good from the get-go if it's going to compete in a Roto format. And so that's the one where I really have work to do, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not entirely in a similar boat, but this conversation kind of goes full circle because, you know, we were talking about Zach Wheeler and how, you know, drafting these injured pitchers could really put you in a tough position. And so I purposefully, you know, as Chad mentioned, this is a, you start five starting pitchers and that's it for the week. There's only five starting pitcher slots. So like I drafted Zach Wheeler as my sixth thinking, all right, you know, I have five guys ready to go. The problem is one of those five guys was Hunter Green, who like, yeah. I don't know, man, I don't feel good about that situation at all. You know, a guy who averages 100 million miles an hour on his elbow. Like, I don't know about that. So, because I drafted Zach Wheeler, like I kind of feel like I'm in a spot now. Fortunately, I also had Gavin Williams. So my five starters are Sandy, Chase Burns, Yuri Perez, Cole Reagans, Gavin Williams. And like, that's a pretty good rotation. But now if any one of those five go down, I mean, I'm looking at Kodai Senga or I'm looking at free agency and neither of those options really excite me that much. So
yeah,
I hear you on the injury front. I'm feeling a little bit more on the pitching. Another injury that has changed things since we drafted, which again, I guess is kind of the focus of this pod, is in my outfield. I had an individual by the name of Corbin Carroll on a great keeper contract too. Now I'm not scrambling quite as much. I did draft, I think it was Chase DeLauder to fill in for him. Yeah, that looks like the case. So my outfield is now Roman Anthony, Carey Carpenter, Dylan Cruz, DeLauder, Kwan, until Corbin Carroll comes back. But if anything happens to one of those guys, like I'm also in the same boat where I'm looking at Jesus Sanchez or whoever it might be. So I think now, particularly in keeper leagues, these long-term leagues, like this is a great time to hit that trade market, start sending those emails, start sending those messages and seeing what can come out, because I haven't had any bites yet in the keeper cut listener league, Otnu league, that I really want to make some deals in. But otherwise I've been able to make some deals in some other leagues that have certainly helped deal with all these injuries.
Yeah. It's a time of year to trade because in general, other than people having injuries to deal with, everybody is at the moment, like they had just drafted these guys. Like, you know, it's hard to find, like trades work best, especially early in the season when both teams are still, you know, when someone's not selling, and maybe someone is selling, but if no one's selling, then trades this time of year work best when there's a mismatch between how one party values a player and how the other party values him, right? So like, but you sort of know that like a few weeks ago you drafted a guy who I didn't draft, So, you took him earlier than I would have. And so it's a little bit harder, I think, to find those trades right now. And that's, I think, what I'm struggling with is when I look at these trades, it's like, because I've gotten a couple of offers in that, in our Auto New Listener League, and they're just, they haven't been interesting. And it feels like there should be something there, and I don't know what it is, because in general, I'm like, I have the guys on my roster I have because I like them. And so it's hard to find the right fit. Now in that league, because of some of the stuff I'm trying to do, I joined OPL in that league. And so I am interested in like moving some future value for current production. I've got some guys I would move who I think are pretty intriguing, but it hasn't really led to anything yet. Mm-hmm. And the offers I've been getting have been, I don't know, mostly unimpressive.
Yeah, I think, and it's weird because you would think in a format like Ought New or even in a keeper league, it's actually easier to make those post-draft trades because it isn't as simple as like, well, I didn't draft that guy you're offering me and I drafted these guys instead, so why would I want them? Because especially in Ought New, like some of us, we went into the auction with 30 players and we're only looking to get 10. Right. So you would think there's more to pick from there. But I've noticed the same thing in that league. I've had a hard time, but I guess a good example of having that surplus of things that you've kept that is maybe interesting in trades is like, I didn't like my rotation when we got out of that auction in League 13. And I knew I had a cheap infield, like all across the board. I've got a cheap Weatherholtz, Colson Montgomery. I had a cheap Westberg. I had a cheap Eugenio Suarez. So I was like, all right, I have depth here that I can trade from. And so I offered Jordan Westberg for Gavin Williams. Now, obviously that looks really good now because Jordan Westberg has a partially torn UCL and we don't know how that's going to end. Sure. But even if Jordan Westberg wasn't hurt, I still felt like that was a good trade for my team regardless, because I'm trading from depth to make up for this shortcoming from the draft. So like, that's why I think that's a more feasible market. Whereas if I was going to free agency in that league for starting pitching at this point, I mean, good God, I don't even know who would be there. Like maybe Cutter Crawford is somebody I could get for a dollar, but I don't know, man, with all these injuries that are coming out of spring, if you can't do the trade market, I just don't know if there's answers at this point.
Yeah. And that is sort of where I'm feeling stuck at the moment is like, I don't know where I'm going to find anything useful there. You can find parts, but finding something useful that will actually make your team better is so hard this time of year. Because everything is, you know, like I said, the things that have changed for me, at least, and I'm curious if you feel the same way, but for me, only bad things happen this time of year, right? It's like, this guy got suspended, this guy got hurt, but like, so-and-so has like, you know, the news that someone has like a new swing and if they're hitting the ball harder is like, okay, they hit the ball harder in Arizona. Like, I don't know how much to value that. And the answer in general is not very much. Maybe that's a little different with pitchers where like a big jump in velocity is like a real measurable thing that has value. But I really struggle this time of year because I just don't care if somebody sprint change things. Nobody is jumping off the page for me as like, oh, you know, I missed out on this guy before, but now I got a shot at them and I'm excited because they're somehow better because they just, I just don't buy it.
Well, like the classic example of that right now is Matt McClain, who's, you know, hitting like over 600 with like four home runs. And, you know, he's a player who's been drafted highly in the past. He was pacing for 30-30 his rookie season. Like he's an appealing guy, but when you look at a lot of it, like not enough, to me anyway, seems to have changed. Like it's not like he's posting a new high max exit velocity. It's not like, I don't know. I don't even know what it would be that would make me think, okay, based on the spring production, I need to start pushing Matt McClain up my board. I would just feel like I'm now overdrafting this player and falling for spring stats. Whereas you're right. the bad news just feels so detrimental, and most of the time actually is. We can put right. stock in it. Like, I can put stock in the fact that I have no idea when I'm getting Blake Snell or Hunter Green back, but I can't really put a lot of stock in Matt McClain tearing it up, assuming that I'm going to have some 30-30 beast at second base. Like, it is. Spring is just a bummer, man. Like, our heads, we think spring is so awesome, but it's really just gloomy weather around here. It's raining all the time, and players get hurt. There's not a lot of good news to pull from it.
Yeah, I think that's true for me. I even when I hear things like the positive stuff is like, oh, this guy whose velocity was down had a better velocity this time around. I'm like, okay, it was down 2 miles an hour. Now it's only down one. Maybe next time he'll be back where he's supposed to be. there's not a lot that I look at and I'm like, oh, good. Although, again, I do think velocity is the one thing. Like, I am continuing to track what's going on with Shota Imanaga, because his velocity being up as much as it was, it was up like 3 miles per hour. That is actually intriguing to me. Like, that is a real measurable thing that the results haven't followed. And so now you get into an interesting debate of, like, if you believe the velocity increase is real, and there's no reason to think the velocity increase isn't real. But if you believe the velocity increase is real, how much are you willing to bet on that turning into results when you're not seeing them yet? And that is always a challenge for me this time of year when I see something that looks intriguing but isn't delivering yet.
Yeah, I don't know what to put into that, because we're talking about a 32-year-old pitcher who has a pretty established track record, not necessarily just in the major leagues, but as a professional, of not throwing this hard. And it's not like he had trouble generating, you know, getting guys to chase or anything like that. Like, he's actually pretty good at that. So, I still like him, but that does make him maybe marginally more interesting. So if that's going to be what splits the difference for me between him and, I don't know what pitchers are going around him, but then sure. But it's hard for me to really put even much more stock in that. I guess with pitchers, it's more like, if I hear there's a new pitch and it's working. Now, we've been bitten by that in the past. I mean, just last year it was like, oh my god, Robbie Ray is back, and now he's in San Francisco and he learned this changeup from Tarek Skubal, so he's just going to be a beast. And then he just wasn't, you know. Even putting stock in things that I think are legit oftentimes doesn't work. But I'm gonna need to see Imanaga throwing a lot harder for a lot longer than just the spring for me to buy in on that. There's too much age there to in track record to put too much stock in it.
Well, and that is the other thing about throwing longer to you that matters at this time of year is keeping that velocity up for, you know, three innings is really different than doing it for five or six. And that's the thing that, you know, that'd be the next thing I'd be looking for from someone like that is like, okay, if he's throwing that much harder, is he still doing it? You know, is he maintaining that velocity deep into games? And that, you know, that remains to be seen. I was in Arizona this week. I took went with my sister and brother-in-law, took my son and my nephew down to Arizona to see spring training. It was super, super fun. But one of the games we went to, Tristan McKenzie was starting for the Padres, and
I did not even know he was there.
Yeah, he is. Throwing harder than he, as far as I can tell, has ever thrown in the majors. He was sitting like 95 or 96 or something like that. I mean, and I was super excited just to see him doing that. But like, his control wasn't great. It wasn't super impressive results. It was a short outing. So like, does that stick around? I don't know. And I don't know. I'll say this, like, he wasn't on my radar to draft for obvious reasons. And he's still not on my radar to draft, despite the fact that he had this big jump in velocity, because I don't trust that he's going to stay healthy. I don't trust that the velocity is going to stick. I don't trust that he's going to have the command of that velocity to make it count. But it is something that, like, I noticed.
Sure.
But that is sort of where I am with all this spring stuff, is like, there's stuff I've noticed that's positive, but there's not a lot that I'm like, oh, now I need to go get this guy. Because it just hasn't, that just typically hasn't been a good way to go about things. So let's take another quick break. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit about some prospects, because that is, this is a big time of year for prospecting in these keeper leagues. So we'll be right back. All right. Welcome back to the Keeper Cut podcast. We are going to talk a little bit about prospects in spring training, because this is an area where, in theory, you have an opportunity to pick up guys who, if they break camp with the team or are up soon and break out, you can get real, real big long-term value in your keeper leagues. And this is an area where keeper leagues really differ from redraft, because the risk, even on a guy like Kevin McGonigal, even on a guy like Connor Griffin, the risk in redraft is, and in actually redraft and in keeper for that matter, the risk is that they're actually not good, right? Like, and I don't want to get into a scouting report on any of these guys, but like, it is always possible that a guy like that just actually isn't good. The upside in redraft is much lower, right? Like, if you pick McGonigal and he is a star, that's great. Maybe you get him starting, you know, a couple weeks into the season, and then he's up early and you get him for most of the year. Like, that is awesome. And then you start over next year. Whereas in keeper leagues, if you pick him up and he is a star, now you've got, you know, your shortstop for the next decade. And that's huge. I don't think we need to talk a ton about those two guys because they're being talked about a lot, but there are some other rookies, potential rookies, that have been, at least for me, less on the radar, but are having excellent spring trainings. And I am interested to know what you think of some of these guys, and if they are guys who are moving up on draft boards for you, or moving up onto watch lists for in-season pickups or anything like that. And the guy I want to start with, as much as it, you know, pains me to make you talk about a Yankee, but Spencer Jones, it's only 19 plate appearances, but the strikeout rate is reasonable and he's hit 3 home runs. Are you interested at all in Spencer Jones?
So it's funny, of all players, you mentioned him, because he's a guy who I feel like I have him, honestly, I think every new league, just because for some reason, like towards the end of auctions, I'm like, all right, what prospect can I stash? I love doing that in new. Like I'll take a couple prospects for a buck and just see how they turn out. That's why I have Weatherholt and McGonigal in league 13, is because I just threw $1 at them. And now that looks like it may have worked out. But like you said, they could both be stiffs. Spencer Jones's case, like I will be excited when it's announced that Spencer Jones is being called up to the Yankees to play baseball. Like that will be exciting news. The problem is potentially the talent. Potentially. He's not a slam dunk prospect. He's been on and off top 100 lists. Like this is not like some top 50 guy we're talking about here. He's been on and off top 100 lists, but his problem is play time. Like they are so log jammed with just these gigantic goons. They didn't expect Grisham to come back. Grisham comes back. They have to bring Bellinger back. They say they want Jason Dominguez to be an everyday player. You're not going to bench the best player in the American League. Giancarlo Stanton, when he played last year, was freaking awesome. Now, he can't open a bag of chips without being in screaming pain, but like, there's just his words. I'm not trying to be mean. Those are his words. Like, there's just no room. Like, we might see George Lombard before we see Spencer Jones, because where the heck is this guy going to play?
Yeah. I do think that is one of the big questions with him.
They brought back Paul Goldschmidt.
Yeah. I think that's the thing. Like the thing with Jones that I see is, first of all, like as you said, not some like top 10 prospect, not a surefire guy. The warts in his game are obvious. And you don't have to be a scout to be like, oh, I don't know, he's got a long swing and maybe major league pitchers. Like, no, he just strikes out all the freaking time. Like, it's not hard to see what his issue is. But he has huge power. If and when he gets to Yankee Stadium, he'll, you know, be in Yankee Stadium, which is a great place for a guy with huge power. And like I said, he has got the strikeout rate down to 26.3% in 19 spring training plate appearances. Now, that is not, you know, it's 19 plate appearances. It's not enough to you know, mean much of anything. But it is the first thing I've seen from him in years. And he's been on our, I mean, the other thing to keep in mind with him is he's 24. He turns 25 in May. He is old for a prospect. So I think one of the other things that people are going to have to keep in mind is, like, if he starts off just crushing AAA, like, he better, right? Like,
right. Yeah, no, that's a good call.
He's had 300 plate appearances, almost 300 plate appearances in AAA last year. That's his only exposure to AAA. And even at that point, he was already borderline old for the level. He has to crush AAA, because doing less than that at his age isn't a good sign. So I think if he starts, I'm looking for is not, is he crushing AAA? It's, is he striking out a ton still? Is the swing and miss still a huge problem for him? Because if it is, then I'm not super excited that he's hitting a bunch of home runs. I know he'll hit a bunch of home runs in AAA. That is a given. But yeah, I think the other big sort of red flag here for him is the Yankees seem to have no interest in seeing what he can do. Just none. And maybe that's just the reality of their situation, that like you said, they want to see what they have in Dominguez. They can't even do that because Grisham accepted the qualifying offer, and they're in this weird situation where, like, okay, well, Judge and Grisham and Dominguez, or that's an outfield. That's an outfield we can be pretty happy with, but their offense isn't really good enough to rely on that without going out and getting Cody Bellinger back.
Exactly.
And so they did that, which makes sense. It was the right thing to do. But so maybe you can make an argument that, like, hey, this isn't, you know, the fact that there's no room for him is not that they aren't interested in him. It's purely they're the Yankees, and the Yankees can't accept the risk of mediocrity. Right. I get that. And so therefore they don't have room to give him a shot right now, but they wish they did. Maybe that's true, but it's also pretty hard not to look at him and be like, eh, maybe they just don't care about Spencer Jones at all. And so I am, in general, I think the combination of lack of opportunity, the fact that the organization doesn't really seem to believe in him, and the fact that he has this massive red flag in his profile, like, all of that added up, like, those are all things that individually I could get over. Added together, I don't think I can.
Yeah.
So I want to talk about a different big power bat in the outfield. This guy is younger, has only reached Double A, but was excellent in Double A last year for the Cardinals, and that is Joshua Baez. Baez is 22. He doesn't turn 23 until June. He should be ticketed for Triple A this year and ready for a call-up whenever the Cardinals decide they are ready for him. And it seems like the Cardinals' plan this year is to, like, let Victor Scott see what he can do, let Jordan Walker see what he can do, and then if these guys are, you know, bad, move on. Which means Baez should get a shot when it comes up. He is also having a huge spring. He has a 470 WOBA in 21 plate appearances. Yeah, it's 21 plate appearances. But having a huge spring, doing everything you could ask of him. And he did have, in 2024, a real strikeout issue in his first look at high A. 260 plate appearances at high A, a 37.3% strikeout rate. Came back in 2025 in high A, and it was 21.4. Moved up to Double A, and it was down to 20.2. And it's only 23.8 in the spring. Now, again, that's only 21 plate appearances. But he is showing me the skills that I want to see from a big power bat. The power is legit. He walks at a high rate. He has consistently run double-digit walk rates. He's at 9.5% this spring. He doesn't seem to have a big strikeout issue. And if you go look at his, like, you know, looking at Fangraphs right now, looking at his prospect grades, a 60 current, 70 future raw power, a 50 current, 60 future game power. He has a 50 speed right now, although you see that going down to a 40 in the future, probably as he fills out. The big question mark with him is a 35 current, 40 future hit tool. But that strikeout rate and that sense of the strike zone, like, that doesn't strike me as a guy who has a massive hole in his swing. And so I Baez is way ahead of Jones for me right now, even though he is a lower rated prospect. I think he looks super fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, particularly from a fantasy perspective, when you talk about a guy that had 20 homers and 54 stolen bases last year and grades out in the fun categories, like his raw power is off the charts on the prospect scale. Like, that part's exciting. But I guess my only hesitation for 2026 is actually what you said at the start, which is, all right, the Cardinals need to get a look at, you know, Jordan Walker, and they got to get a look at I forget the other name that you mentioned there,
Victor Scott.
But their roster is actually full of guys who they need to get a prolonged look at to make some decisions going forward. So if that means that Baez needs to basically spend almost a full season at AAA so that he can mature and do whatever it takes to turn that raw power into real game power, whatever, they need to get a full season's look at Lars Nootbaar. Like, this was a player that a lot of us liked. He's still relatively young. Jordan Walker was supposed to be like the next freaking Chipper Jones. He's awful. We need to see a full season out of Jordan Walker. They have talked about how they want to get, you know, 500 or 600 plate appearances out of Nolan Gorman. That was last year. I have no idea if he reached those marks or not. I'm perfectly fine if anybody's like, no, look, we're done with Nolan Gorman. He's going to have a strikeout rate over 30%. Like, I can't process that. But, like, there's so many guys in this team they need to see a full season of that is the only potential thing, I think, getting in the way of Baez. But when you have a spring like this, all it takes, if the Cardinals somehow start the year 8-3, you know, and they're feeling pretty good, and this kid is tearing the cover off the ball in the minor leagues, then maybe they will rip the Band-Aid off on one of the million names they need to see a prolonged look at and end up calling him up.
Yeah, I mean, I think the question that I have with the Cardinals in this, you know, you're right. They have talked about the fact that they need to see who these guys are. But the thing that I'm not sure of is, do they need to see who those guys are, or is this more that they need to know what they have? And I the difference to me is, we need 500 plate appearances of Jordan Walker is different than we need to know if we have our long-term, you know, right fielder. And if the thing is that they need to know if they have their long-term right fielder, and the first order of business is finding out if that's Jordan Walker, and they decide by May, like, dude, it's not happening, they may feel like they need to move quickly to find out if Baez is that answer. Now, maybe they won't, right? To your point, like, they're not winning anything this year, so they may also just be like, whatever, we're going to let Jordan Walker flail for the full season, even if it's obvious that what's happening, because we're going to make sure that there is no question when we're done that we know. That is a possible outcome here. So it makes it really hard for me to judge. Do I think Baez is near term in their plans or not? I think what I will say is, like, if you look at their minor league system right now, you know, it looks like Weatherholt is likely up.
Oh, now he's up now,
right?
He has to be.
Then if you look at the rest of their top prospects, they've got two interesting catchers. Jimmy Crooks is, you know, semi-interesting, older. And then Reiniel Rodriguez, who looks really interesting, but is further away. And then you got a bunch of pitchers. You got Liam Doyle, Gerangelo Clinchy, Brandon Clark. They don't really have another interesting outfield prospect at all. Like, you go down, like, if I'm looking at their Fangraphs list again, like, their 13th and 14th best prospects are both outfielders. They are in rookie ball and high A, respectively. Their 25th best prospect is Nathan Church. He's a 40 future value. Like, that's it. Baez is it. So if I go and look at, you know, if I think, put myself in the Cards position where they are thinking, we think we've got a pretty solid core forming here with Herrera and Weatherholt and Burleson and Wynn, and we have to see who else is part of that core. There's a real world in which they're like, that means finding out now if we need another outfielder or if Baez is the answer. And so I see it. I just see it going both ways. That's all.
And I guess the one footnote you could add to that is if they feel like Baez from the jump could be a rookie of the year contender, well, that could actually bolster that sad minor league situation. So,
yeah,
you know, that's one of the perks now of having those guys called up early and having them in contention for that rookie of the year. So that could, that
for sure.
You have to think that comes up in closed doors meetings for every organization about their top prospects.
I would think so. And like, this is where, boy, if I were running the Guardians, having Travis Bezzana give us, like, having both Bezzana and DeLauder give the team, not only give the team two shots at those picks, but also probably be the best center fielder and best second base options on the rosters anyway. Like, this feels like a no-brainer, and I'm surprised we haven't seen more teams call guys like that up, give them 6 to 8 weeks, and if we're like, wow, those two guys look like they're, you know, a good second half, they're going to win the rookie of the year, at least be in the conversation. If they're not at that point, then you send them down. You say they have something right to work on. You figure out something for them to do. They go work on it for a month. And it's no different than having called them up 2 or 3 weeks later, except you've given yourself a real shot at some bonus draft picks that have a ton of value, especially for an organization like Cleveland. Like, I can understand why, you know, in theory, someone like the Dodgers might be like, eh, like, yeah, draft picks are nice, but like, we can go get the guys we need when we need them anyways. And so that's not our biggest focus. But like, man, these teams that don't spend money, this is it. This is your opportunity to steal an extra draft pick. And those draft picks are like gold for teams like that. And so I'm surprised we don't see it that situation happening more, where they're like, yeah, we think he's ready. Oh, he's not going to win rookie of the year. Maybe he wasn't ready. Let's give him some time to get ready. And like, this just, it seems like a, you know, you could argue it's disingenuous or whatever, but like, it would be so easy to pull off without it looking problematic, because if the guy's not a rookie of the year candidate, then it's not that hard to argue he could use some time in AAA.
And most of the 90 plus percent of the time, that actually is the case, right? Like, we see this all the time where people are pounding their fists to prospects to get called up. They finally get called up and, oh, look at that. They're actually getting their asses kicked because they weren't ready for this. That ends up being the case. So like, it's not like you have to, you know, tuck your tail in between your legs and walk the other way. Like, you can stand on 2 feet and say, we gave him a chance. He's got stuff to work on, and hopefully it works out next year. Like, there's nothing wrong with that.
The prime example of this actually from last year is Christian Campbell.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Like, everybody was like, this guy's ready. He's going to be a star. Like, now we're not even sure if he's going to be on the roster this year. So
he
like,
was going like top 100 in some drafts. Like, when the helium got to its height, I mean, it was out of control.
Yeah. So I got one more guy I want to talk about real quick, because we're sort of running out of time here. But another guy having a big spring, who I picked up in a draft today. And so I'm especially interested in your take on this guy. But a couple years ago, when he was a little bit younger and in the Philly system, Mick Abel looked like he was maybe on his way to being something special. The results were never really there, especially in the high minors. He just just wasn't that good. He got to Minnesota last year, and in AAA for Minnesota, he made 5 starts, 24 innings, had a 1.85 ERA. He had a 35.5% K rate, a 26.9% K minus BB. He has now shown up in spring training. He has thrown 10 innings. 10 innings, obviously, you know, not a lot, and it's spring training. But 10 innings, 13 strikeouts, 0 walks, 5 hits. That's really good. So is Mick Abel, like, is this it? Is this, you know, he should have a real, like, real opportunity this year. That a team doesn't have anyone else.
Right. And well, the big thing was the Pablo Lopez injury, because otherwise they could roll out a Joe Ryan, Bailey Ober, Simeon Woods Richardson, and they got Taj Bradley at the last year's trade deadline. So he could have been boxed out, but sadly, Pablo Lopez, a guy who you and I are fans of, Keeper Cut's a big fan of Pablo Lopez, went down, and now that opportunity is there. And I feel like we're going to see it. He's going to be the fifth starter in Minnesota. It's easy to, like, Mick Abel is a big dude. He is 6'5". He gets great extension. Like, I am excited. I can't really say, like, oh, well, you know, I have a lot of faith in what the Twins do with their pitchers. I don't think we have a ton of evidence of that recently, right? Like, Joe Ryan was more a product of the Rays. Bailey Ober's had an up and down career. So it's not one of those situations, but it is a situation that you broke down pretty well. He's a former top prospect. He had his chance. He didn't shine. But all of a sudden, he's kicking butt now. So, you know, we want to be careful. We don't want to overrate spring training like we were just saying not to do, and we do the stance every year. But if you're looking for something to get excited about, if you're looking for a pitcher to replace Hunter Green or Pablo Lopez or, you know, whoever it is that you have, I don't know if there's a lot of better options right now than Mick Abel. It's looking pretty good.
Yeah, I'm, you know, I think the three guys we talked about, Jones and Baez and Abel, I think we talked about them in reverse order of how intrigued I am by them right now. I think Jones, I'm just not going to have him on rosters. Like, I don't know, whatever. Like, I'm just not, cause I just don't want to sit waiting on him forever. And I don't know what the path is, and I don't trust the talent. Baez, I'm really intrigued by the talent. I think there is a path, but it's not super clear what that path is or how quickly it'll become available. And then you have Abel, who it looks like I'm excited about. Like, he's got the talent, he's got the opportunity. I'm sort of all systems go on Mick Abel right now.
Agreed. Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you all for listening to this. This was I feel like this is a little rambly. We went here, we went there, we talked about some guys, but hopefully it was interesting. We'll try to get back into more of a routine. I don't know about you, Pete, but I'm done with travel for, I got spring break coming up in a month, but until spring break, I'm done with travel. So hopefully we'll be able to get some more of these in.
Yeah, 100%.
All right, well, again, thank you all for listening, and hopefully we'll be back with you next week, if not soon after. Have a good one.